When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, reader. I'm Cindy Burnett. Welcome to my award-winning podcast, Thoughts from a Page, which is a member of the Evergreen Podcasts Network. On the show, I chat with authors whose books I have enjoyed about their new releases, and I give you a peek behind the curtain of the publishing industry with my Behind the Scenes series. With so many books coming out weekly, it can be hard to decide what to read. So I find the best ones and share them with you. If you're looking for a community of readers, bonus content, and a chance to read books before they hit the shelves, I hope you'll consider joining my Patreon group, which is filled with a wonderful bunch of book lovers. The link to join is in the show notes. Today, I am chatting with Holly Gramazio about The Husbands. I first learned about this book last fall and knew I had to read it. I really enjoy books with interesting premises, and this one certainly has that. Holly also added to my vocabulary because she taught me a new word, polyandry. She is a writer, game designer, and curator from Adelaide, currently based in London. Holly founded the experimental games festival Now Play This and wrote the script for the award-winning indie video game Dicey Dungeons. She's particularly interested in rules, play, cities, gardens, and games that get people acting creatively, and in art that gets people interacting with their surroundings in new ways. I hope you enjoy our conversation.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Welcome, Holly. How are you today?
I'm well, thank you.
I'm so glad you're here, because as soon as I heard about your book last fall, I thought, this sounds like such a fun read. I got a hold of a copy, I read it, and I loved it. It will be one of my top reads of 2024, so I'm thrilled that we're getting to chat about it.
Oh, I'm so glad you enjoyed it. I'm really excited to be here.
Well, and you've had some great press. I saw both the Kirkus and the Publishers Weekly reviews were great, and I've heard other people chatting about it as well. So that is very exciting.
Yeah, I try not to read things just because, you know, eventually one of them's going to be bad, and I want to get into the habit of not reading them, even when I know they're basically quite good. But I did read a couple of sentences that my agent sent over from the Kirkus and Publishers Weekly ones, and it was very gratifying.
That's actually a great way to do it. Have somebody just read them ahead and send you the parts they think you'll like. The only funny thing I thought about the Kirkus review was they said, this is not a book about bigamy. And I was like, huh. And really it would be polygamy, I guess, versus bigamy. But I was like, huh, well, I don't think I ever thought that it was a book about bigamy. But, you know, it was not said in a bad way. And the review itself was great, but it just cracked me up.
Yeah, I guess it'd be polyandry, wouldn't it? Because it's husbands rather than wives.
Oh, you're probably right. I don't even know. Okay,
yeah,
I'm not sure I know that word.
I do not have my etymological dictionary to hand, so I can't say for sure. But whatever it is, that's not what the book's about.
Exactly. Whatever the correct word is, it's not this. Well, why don't you give me a quick synopsis of The Husbands for those that haven't read it yet?
Of course. So The Husbands is a book about a woman whose attic starts creating an infinite supply of husbands for her. Basically, there's a woman named Lauren who gets home late one night after her best friend's hen party, and she finds a man waiting for her on the stairs. And this man seems to think that he's her husband. And actually, his face, a photo of his face, is the lock screen on her phone, and the walls are a different colour, and there's a photo of their wedding up on it. But she's almost certain that when she went out to the party, she was single. So it's all deeply weird. But it is 3 a.m. and she's been drinking a bit, so she just barricades herself in the living room and decides she'll deal with it in the morning. But then in the morning, when she goes to confront this strange man, he climbs into the attic to change a light bulb. And when he climbs down, he's a totally different man. The walls are a different colour as well, and the photo on her phone is a different photo. And she eventually figures out that her attic is transforming these men, that every time a man climbs up into the attic, he climbs down as a different person, a different husband for her, being provided for her infinitely.
This is such a clever premise. I'm dying to know how you came up with it.
Oh, I think there's a few different things that fed into it. One of the things behind it is just sitting with friends while they do the scrolling on the dating apps, right? And taking over for them for a while because they get bored scrolling through this seemingly infinite supply of people, and they just can't bear even to look at another face. And they're just like, oh, you choose someone for me. And this very strange carousel of people to look at. So that's definitely somewhere in it. Another part of it is that I have tended to be in like long-term relationship after long-term relationship, right? So when I've broken up with someone in the past, I've thought, oh, okay, I'm going to be a glamorous single woman. I'm going to go and drink cocktails in a bar. It's all going to be delightful. And then like 6 weeks later, it's like a bell rings and whoever I'm standing next to at the time, we're in a long-term relationship and we've moved in together. So Lauren's experience of sort of being catapulted from husband to husband to husband is a little bit like my own historical dating life. And I think one other thing that feeds into it is just that I'm Australian and we don't have attics in Australia, because firstly, we don't need them so much because it's a more spread out country. So there's a little bit less pressure on space. And another part of it is just that it gets really hot and full of spiders all the time. So why would you have a room in your roof? So there's not really this culture of having an attic where you just put chairs or Christmas trees or shove a box up and then bring it down later. And then I moved to the UK and everyone has attics here and says things like, oh, I don't really know what's up in the attic. I haven't been up there in a year. And it's this room that's in your house that you can't really get to without a ladder and you don't know what's in it. It's such a weird situation to me. So I think that definitely fed into the husbands as well.
Okay, that is so funny. I am in Texas and we do have attics, but it gets pretty hot here. So in the summer, I try my very best to not go in the attic because it's sweltering.
Makes sense.
But I just loved this book, I think for so many reasons, but one of them was it's really thought-provoking. You think about, okay, endless choices, which is what we have for everything today, not just dating apps, but food and shopping and television and music. Like it's overwhelming at times. And so it was really interesting to think about that aspect of your book for not only husbands, but just kind of everything. But I also was so curious, after you came up with the idea, how you implemented it. Like there are so many little clever facets of your story. You talked a little bit about Lauren's phone changing, the apartment changing, or the flat changing. But how did you work through those details? You came up with the idea, and then how did you work on implementing it?
One of the things that I'm interested in is the ways that we can be quite different people when we're in different circumstances, with different partners, or in different cities, or in different jobs, or even just doing a different hobby. And one of the things that I was thinking about with the husbands was how to illuminate these different senses of the possible lives that Lauren could live, the plausible ways that she could be. So I did a lot of sitting down and thinking through what are the different axes upon which this character might vary, what sort of jobs might she have, what's the range of plausible ways for her to spend her spare time, what sorts of friends might she have, what types of interior decoration might one version of her have decided to like, what sort of wallpaper that one person loves, one Lauren loves, that a different Lauren hates, is possible within the range of people that she might be. And then structuring the novel, thinking about how to fit in these different versions of herself, I really wanted to give a sense of the range of possibilities.
Well, I loved that. And I know more time goes into it than you would think as you're reading these different personalities of Lauren. But I just loved that. And then also, did you have so much fun creating all of these husbands, deciding what their characteristics were going to be, particularly the ones that are really annoying? Was that fun?
I had so much fun making up the husbands. That was definitely the most just pure fun bit of writing in the book, just sitting there going, oh, okay, who's a guy who might exist? There are dozens and dozens of husbands that didn't make it into the final book. There are whole chapters just listing paragraph-long versions of men that that we had to cut out because once you've started, it's really hard to stop.
Okay, I love that. You're like, I have 200 more husbands that could go in the book, but we had to get rid of them.
I also made a little thing called the husband generator. My background is actually in games and writing for video games. And so when I was writing the novel and I wanted to think about the sorts of husbands that could exist, I made this little digital tool for myself, which would just randomly recombine names and jobs and pets and annoying habits and excited hobbies and all of that kind of thing, suggesting potentially millions of types of men that could exist. You know, like those little flip books that have hats and faces and different legs? A bit like that, but just with sentences about husbands. And so I could just sit there hammering the next button, next, 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 until I got a man who seemed like he might work in the book.
Okay, that's hysterical. I love that you're able to combine your day job with this writing this book and creating something that helps you create the husbands.
Yeah, it was really good fun. We ended up putting a version of it online. So if you want to create your own husbands, you can do that.
Okay, I'm going to definitely have to link that in the show notes. So I also really enjoyed that life continues for Lauren. This isn't a Groundhog Day situation where she wakes up every day or, you know, every time somebody comes down from the attic, time has stood still. She continues to progress through her life. How did you decide to do it that way versus keeping it in more of a Groundhog Day format?
I think for me, it feels more real to Lauren's circumstances to have her life progressing. That I think one of the difficulties with this sense of infinite choice about potential partners or about toothbrushes or about jams or restaurants that you might want to go to is that while you are deciding about it, while you're thinking about it, time is still proceeding. I'm really bad at deciding where to have lunch if I'm on my own. So the number of times I've been wandering around a city going, oh, not here, not here, not here, maybe that place back there, and then realizing it's 3 p.m. and I'm really grumpy and everywhere stopped serving lunch is, you know, at least in the double figures. So I think one of the things I wanted to explore with the book was the way that this sense of infinity can be treacherous, can lead to you suddenly passing an hour or a day or a year or 10 years still waiting to realize what the one perfect thing you should do is, rather than accepting that maybe there isn't one perfect thing that you should do. And there are a range of possible options that might all be good.
And that certainly is the downside to endless choice, is that you keep thinking there's going to be something better if I keep going.
Yeah, absolutely. And if it reset with Lauren each time there was a new husband, then the cost of that is so much less. It's tedious to sit through, you know, an infinity of husbands, but there's no real downside other than the fact that it's kind of boring to work your way through. Whereas if you have time passing like it does in the world for all of us, then there's a real cost to that.
I agree with that. And I don't want there to be any spoilers because I don't want to ruin anything for anybody. But I was curious as the book was progressing, okay, where is she going to go with this? You know, at some point you do have to say, okay, I can't read through 400 husbands. And you did the perfect balance of that, I will say. How did you decide how you would handle that part of it? And I guess that's a hard question with no spoilers, but you can try.
Yes. I didn't want to end up saying, oh, anyone will do. Any of these husbands are fine. Any life that you want to pick will be basically okay. Any jam that you buy from the shop will be about as good as any other jam, because that's just palpably not true. But I also didn't want to end up saying that there is one best ultimate life and that Lauren has to figure out what the best possible life is for her and access that life. And then, great, job done. And we should all do that. We shouldn't buy jam till we know what the exact right jam is. We shouldn't go on a date till we know the best possible person to go on a date with. So I was thinking about balancing that and trying to make a range of husbands of different enticingness levels, if that makes sense, but also different styles of being fun to spend time with. I think people can reasonably read the book and have different favourite husbands, which is something that I was really keen on, that there's not an obvious correct choice for her, but there's space for people to go, oh, I liked so-and-so, oh, I preferred such-and-such.
Well, absolutely. And it's just so thought-provoking because as you read, you're thinking, oh, I've dated this person in the past and that person, and I learned different things from each of them, which is what's happening with her. She's learning what she likes, what she doesn't like, what's really important to her, and what might be nice and acceptable. And I think that as we go about our lives, that's such an interesting premise.
Yeah. I'm glad that came through for you.
So let's talk about the attic. I'm always curious in these type of stories how the author creates the attic. Like, I understand why you chose attics. How did you go about figuring out how the attic was going to work? Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Should maybe start by saying that another reason that it's an attic is that an attic feels less threatening. You get a lot of books where you get men or husbands lurking in a basement, and they're usually quite threatening. It's usually horror or thriller adjacent. And so coming with this much lighter story, having an attic felt almost the opposite of that, this sort of signal up front that it's not that sort of story. And then when I began thinking about the rules of how it would work, I kind of just tried to work out what made sense for the story, what was a coherent set of ways that it could work that served what I was trying to do. And I wanted to make sure that it was something that Lauren could explore and have a little bit of fun with testing the boundaries of it and trying to figure out how it worked. I didn't want to come up with a huge set of rules that were expressed really clearly in chapter 3, say, where you go, this is how the attic works, this is exactly how everything happens. I wanted to provoke the curiosity of the reader and satisfy it in the same way that I could imagine Lauren's curiosity being provoked and her experimenting in different ways to find the answers. There's a couple of scenes where she sort of tests the boundaries of how the attic works and tries to figure that out. And I wanted to put those in at a point where I thought the reader might be wondering that. The reader might be thinking, why doesn't she try this? Why doesn't she try that? What happens if you do this other thing? Wanted to people to have those questions in their head and then for the book to answer them.
And it was so engaging as all of that was playing out because I was curious about the attic myself. So I loved that you incorporated that into Lauren's story.
Another thing that I did with the attic was have all of that sort of structure of how it works really, really upfront in the first chapter, first section of the second chapter. Just this is what's happening. And this is the basic premise of how it worked. Because it is a quite out there premise, right? And it won't be for everyone. And I wanted people to get to it really quickly, you know, still within the chapter that they're flicking through in the bookshop or the library or the free sample if they're reading an ebook or whatever it is, so that they decide whether they're up for it or not, and then sort of step willingly into this slightly heightened, unlikely version of reality.
I like that. And I think we're seeing more and more books with these type of premises, not the attic, but just things that can happen magically or however. And there doesn't need to be a huge explanation for it. You just need to understand what the premise is and how it's going to play out.
I think so. And you decide whether you're up for that or whether you're not. It's the sort of time loop that you mentioned earlier obviously has a long history through Groundhog Day and more recently Russian Doll and Palm Springs. And that sort of sense of here's the type of story we're telling. If you're up for it, that's what's going to happen. There's not going to be some sort of big physics diagram at the end that explains how it works or anything. This is just the price of admittance is that you decide this is a fun idea that you want to play around with.
Well, that's a very valid point. And the other thing I loved about the attic, my friend Kristen Cusick-Lewis, who writes the Real Simple monthly book roundups, she and I were talking about this book and how much we loved it. And she said she has started joking with her husband that whenever she's annoyed with him, she's going to send him up into the attic. Your book may create an entirely new expression for the English language. We'll all be like, okay, time for you to go up in the attic.
Yes, people quite often ask my husband how he feels about that. And we don't actually have an attic. So he's like, yep, it's fine. Definitely fine.
He's like, I don't have to worry about that because we don't have an attic.
Yeah, exactly.
What surprised you the most when you were writing this one?
I came to writing fiction not very late, but also not straight out of university or anything, right? I started writing The Husbands, I think, not long before my 40th birthday. And I'd kind of always assumed that maybe I'd eventually get around to having a real go at writing a novel. But I didn't really know what to expect, what sort of novelist I would turn out to be. So sitting down and beginning to write The Husbands without a real sense of what genre I was writing in or where it was heading or what the end was going to be even. It was just this sort of exploration of what I felt like writing morning to morning and discovering day by day how that would go. I didn't know whether I would be writing a really straightforward rom-com, whether I would be writing a deeply experimental piece of literary fiction, whether I would be writing a science fiction or fantasy novel. I just had this idea that I wanted to explore. And so I guess it was surprising to sort of sit down and figure out day by day what kind of a writer I was coming to this sense of openness about writing. When I've written for video games and things like that, there's usually a very specific project that I'm writing for, and it's also usually very collaborative. So it's about figuring out what fits into the project overall. But this thing of just sitting down and going like, right, okay, I'm writing my thing that is just my thing. And I don't even really starting out know what genre I'm intending it to be in. Was a very weird experience, just slowly figuring it out over the course of, you know, initially 140,000 words. It was way too long in the first draft. What type of writing I wanted to do.
Okay, that's fascinating to me that you didn't even have a concept, just really an idea. And you sat down and started with that idea and it took you to The Husbands. I love that.
I find with a lot of my self-driven projects, I'm not really a planner. I don't have this is exactly how everything is going to go. I have a situation and perhaps I have a few images or emotional moments that I really want to get to. So I really like relief as an emotion. I like a sense of heightened tension and then, oh, thank goodness, everything is okay. So I knew there were a couple of moments of relief that I wanted to have in The Husbands. I knew I wanted the image of this square of an attic and the ladder coming out and some legs coming out and you don't know who they belong to yet. I had these moments that I knew I wanted to sort of steer between. But how I got there, I really had no idea when I started out.
And I think you did such a wonderful job of putting the reader in Lauren's shoes, because as each person was coming down, I was so on pins and needles as to what the husband was going to be like. And then when it was somebody awful, I was like, oh my gosh, poor Lauren, she's got to get rid of him.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that.
Let's talk about the title and the cover, because when I actually first got my galley, it didn't even have the cover. It just had writing on it. They hadn't finalized the cover yet. I'd love to hear how your title experience and your cover experience went.
Okay, the title was pretty straightforward. I started writing it and called it The Husbands in the file that I opened up, and then it pretty much stayed The Husbands all the way through. There was a point where I looked up, are there any other books called The Husbands? And there are a couple, thankfully. If there was just one, then that would seem a bit stranger, I think, to sort of step on the toes of the one other book that has your name. But because there are a couple around, it was like, okay, great. Being called The Husbands is a thing that can be the case for a book. A couple of books have done it before. Seems to work. No one ever really suggested changing it. And the cover was slightly more difficult set of discoveries, I guess. And there's different covers in the UK and the US versions as well. So there's sort of parallel people working away on what the cover should be. Yeah, we had a few versions through the months of getting around to it that tried to articulate it in different ways. There was a more realistic room with an attic. There was a sort of more of a flipbook husband look. There were a couple of versions which I don't think I even got to see because they tried them and went, no, this isn't working. They're really trying to find a way to encapsulate a sense of fun and adventure and also connect to what actually happened in the book. And because it is a reasonably unusual plot, I think that was quite a challenge. Really, really happy with what we ended up with.
I agree. And I just looked up the UK cover while you were chatting, and it is so different. So that's very interesting. I had not seen it. But for me, I'm a huge cover person. It's something I'm always fascinated with, and I pay very close attention. So it was interesting to read your book before it had a cover. and then see the cover developed later. Like, I love that. It was kind of an interesting concept for me to think, okay, what would the cover look like if it were me, and am I going to like it? And then I thought, I think the US cover is great as well as the UK cover, but they are drastically different.
Yeah, yeah, they really are. They've both got a ladder on them, which I love as a little connection there, but they're very sort of stylistically different. I'm really happy with them both. I love them both.
Yeah, that's nice. You have several options. Well, Holly, before we wrap up, what have you read recently that you really liked?
I've been trying to read a different debut novel every week this year, just because I'm spending so much time thinking about mine, and it's getting really boring in my head. I just think about the husbands constantly. And I thought if I started reading other books that are also by debut authors, so their first novel coming out, then maybe that would work to kind of concentrate my attention on other things that people cared about as much as I care about this. And so that's been really interesting. I particularly enjoyed a book called Greta and Vauden by Rebecca Riley, which actually came out in 2021 in New Zealand, but is just getting a UK and a US release this year. And it's about two siblings, Greta and Vauden, and their families and their love lives and their work, and just going about their sort of day-to-day existence in Auckland. And I just really loved the tone of it, the voice of it. It's incredibly engaging and fun. It's so nice to read a book that is deeply, deeply New Zealand-y. Riley wrote a lovely piece for Lit Hub, I think, which is about when she first wrote it, some responses from readers around whether it would be able to find a wider audience and whether she should make it more internationally legible. And I'm really happy that she didn't succumb to that pressure, that it enjoys so much the specificity of its location and its characters and the places that they're spending time in. And I also really loved Feria Lennon's Glorious Exploits, which is a book about two Syracusan potters in around 400 BC at the time when the Athenians invaded. And it went really, really badly for the Athenians. And a lot of the Athenian soldiers ended up prisoners in the quarries. And these two potters, one of them is really obsessed with Euripides and starts visiting the quarries and trying to get lines of Euripides out of the prisoners and eventually bribing them with food, essentially, into putting on a production of one of his plays. And it's just this extraordinary thing. It's a sort of book that you read going, I don't know how it would occur to someone to try to write this. It's in this very comic, sort of contemporary sounding Irish inflected tone. And the idea of trying to do that is itself kind of boggling to me. And the fact that he pulled it off so well, it's such a funny, awful miracle of a book. Really loved it.
Well, that's what I like so much about your book, is that it is a very interesting premise. And you think, how is that going to play out? And as you were describing this book, I was thinking the same thing. And then you said that. That always draws me to books because I'm thinking, this is totally different than anything else I've read.
That's really delightful to hear. Thank you.
And I agree with you. I have not read the book set in New Zealand, but I love books that have strong senses of place and bring that place to you. And so I'm glad that she did keep it that way, because I feel like there aren't tons and tons of books set in New Zealand. And that's such a great way to learn more about a particular place.
Yeah, it's a real delight of a book. I think you'd enjoy it.
Okay, good. Well, Holly, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me. I really appreciate your coming on the Thoughts from a Page podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been so nice chatting.
History is complicated. The story of human progress is long, messy, and riddled with controversies big and small. On Conflicted, we dive headfirst into history's most infamous events and contentious figures. We try and untangle the good from the bad, the fact from the fiction, and the monsters from the misunderstood. Was Genghis Khan a murderous butcher or a civic pioneer? Did the Allied powers go too far in firebombing the German city of Dresden at the twilight of World War II? And how did the Marquis de Sade acquire such a sinister reputation? And was any of it true? These are just a few of the tough questions we wrestle with and investigate on Conflicted. So if you love history or just enjoy a good story, please join me, your host, Zach Cornwell, for a fascinating new topic each and every month. Conflicted, a history podcast, is available on Spotify, Apple, or wherever else you get your podcasts. I hope to see you soon.
Are you tired of seeing your teen or young adult struggle on a path that clearly isn't the right fit? Is your teenager confused about which direction to take after high school? The future of work is changing rapidly, and our kids need to know all of the options available after high school so they're empowered to make the choice that is best for them. In each episode, we explore the latest trends that are shaping the opportunities of today and tomorrow. I'm your host, Betsy Jewell, and this is the High School Hamster Wheel Podcast.
Thank you so much for listening to my podcast. I would love to connect with you on Instagram or Facebook, where you can find me at Thoughts From A Page. If you enjoy the show, please consider joining my Patreon group to access bonus content and support the podcast. If you have a moment to rate the show or subscribe to it wherever you listen to your podcasts, I would really appreciate it. It makes a big difference. And please tell all of your friends about Thoughts From A Page. Word of mouth does wonders to help the show grow. The book discussed in this episode can be purchased at my bookshop storefront, and the link is in the show notes. I hope you'll tune in next time.
I'm a grown-up.
Me too.
Yep, me too. But you know, these days, being a grown-up can really suck.
Luckily, we're grown-ups who grew up in the coolest generation.
We had video arcades.
And also some of the best TV and movies ever made.
We lived the origin of awesome consumer electronics. The list goes on and on.
Yep, Generation X.
Exactly.
And we're Gen X Grown-Up.
Every week, the Gen X Grown-Up podcast explores media, tech, toys, games, and more from both yesterday and today.
Through the eyes of Generation Xers who absolutely love that stuff. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Or find us on our website, genxgrownup.com. Life sucks as a grown-up. All right, you think that was good enough?
I hope so, man. I'm tired.
Who listens to a promo on a podcast and then goes and listens to a different podcast?
Right.
I've never done it.
Right. I'm Allison Holland, host of the Kennedy Dynasty podcast. Equipped with a microphone and a long-term fascination of the Kennedy family, I am joined by an incredible cast of experts, friends, and guests to take you on a fun, relaxed, yet informative journey through history and pop culture. From book references to fashion to philanthropy to our modern expectations of the presidency itself, you'll see that there is so much more to Kennedy than just JFK or conspiracy theories. Join me for the Kennedy Dynasty podcast.